The lights are on red. We're away.
Hello, and welcome to MotoGP OD, the internet radio show about motorcycle road racing. Today is Friday, February 8th, 2008. I am Bob Hayes, your host, here today to talk with you about MotoGP and all other sorts of things about motorcycles and stuff like that, because we like to talk about that kind of thing. So, first of all, before we kick off the rest of the show, I got a couple of shout-outs to send out for some people that were kind enough to send in some donations to the MotoGPOD cause. They went to the MotoGPOD.com website, clicked on the link on the left-hand side that says donate or make a donation or something like that, and they very, very kindly donated a little bit of money to help pay for the bandwidth and all that kind of good stuff. And we got a donation from Dom Perez. This is his second donation. Thank you very much, Dom. I do appreciate it. That's awesome stuff. And then this is kind of a semi-commercial one. It was donated by SpeedFiends.com. They got a motorcycle gear store there at Speed Fiends, and that's Fiends, F-E-E-N-Z, so speedfiends.com, kind of a pun on fiends, and I will, of course, put a link up to them on the website. Thanks very much for that, guys, and a small brief commercial announcement. Go ahead and check it out. They have some interesting stuff, new and used motorcycle gear that you might be interested in. So thanks a lot to those guys. I do appreciate it. It really does help out a lot. And I tell everybody I kind of that the show has somewhat expanded beyond all my original expectations to become, you know, I've got a fairly wide listenership. I'm fairly proud of that. We've gotten a decent placement in iTunes and all that good stuff. And I think we're fairly well known as far as a MotoGP sort of related podcast is going. And I think that's pretty cool. And I do have to say a big thank you to all the people that have helped me. I've often said stuff like, you know, that this show is just me talking to myself in a room and all of that, but it's really not. It's a big group effort. Thanks very much to like Jules Cisek, Liam Schubert, Darren Carpenter, Chuck Axland, Chris Johnham. Just the list goes on and on and on. And of course, if I haven't mentioned your name, I apologize, but there's a lot of people out there that have helped me that have made this show what it is. So enough thank yous and sappery and whatnot. Why don't we get on with what we're going to talk about today? We do have a conversation with Jules Cisek. So we got Jules back on the show. It's been a little while since he's been on the show. And we're talking, of course, about the testing that's been going on. We had a little hiatus here for MotoGPOD while I went on my Navy school. So we missed an episode last week where there was some stuff to talk about in MotoGP. And I missed an episode. But basically, we're going to cover the Phillip Island testing that went on last week and the Sepang testing that went on just this past week and some other stuff. And so a variety of different things going on because the season is almost upon us, folks. We have about 30 days left until Qatar. So we're getting really, really close till the actual races happen. And between now and then, we have some more testing going on and there'll be some stuff starting to pick up. So we're going to be talking more and more about MotoGP as the show here progresses along, because there's going to be more to talk about. Now, if you've been listening to the show the past several months, you know I've been covering track days a lot. And the thing is that the response was pretty overwhelming. I mean, I got a lot of emails from people all over the world saying, you know, that was great, that I liked it a lot, and this and that and the other. And only a very, very few that sort of said, you know, hey, what's all this chatter about track days? I thought this was MotoGPOD. And one of those emails came from Jules himself, so that one doesn't count. But the thing is on that whole track day thing, we are going to keep coming back to it here and there as the year goes on, because I'll be doing the track days and we'll sort of have some shows, but we're going to fit it in between the MotoGP. When we have MotoGP to talk about, World Superbike to talk about, good stuff like that to talk about, we'll sort of put the track days on the back burner. But when it's a little bit quiet on the motorcycle racing front, we're going to break out the track day stuff because it's really interesting. And I have some personal news to pass on to you all about that. As you know, I decided a while ago that I wanted a specific bike for track days. I wanted a bike that I was going to ride at track days, preferably set up for track days and all that sort of thing. And I finally went ahead and jumped in. I bought one. So I found a 2003 SV650. It's all race prepped. It's got race body work. It's got the rear sets and clip-ons. It's been done. You know, it's a salvage bike, as many, many racing motorcycles are. This one was actually set up for racing, and it was raced. I won't yet be racing it. I don't have the time or the money or the skills for that yet, but I'm going to be doing a lot of track days on it, and who knows, maybe we'll build up to that in the future, and if I do, of course, I'll be talking about that. Now, I bought it from a guy in Portland that's kind of a friend of a friend, sort of a routine, Darren Carpenter, who's been on the show several times, knows the gentleman that I bought it from. And here's the funny part, and I got to pass this on a little bit. I saw this posting on sportbikes.ws in their classified ad section. And, you know, they're talking about the motorcycle, 2003 SV650. It's like, oh, that's right up my alley. No title at all. So, ooh, first of all, I'm just a tiny bit scared. Just, you know, it's a little unfamiliar. This is actually fairly common for racing motorcycles that there's no title, not even a salvage title, but still, you know, a little leery, right? So I call the guy and I talk to him a little bit and everything else. Turns out that he bought it from Mark Sorensen, who has been on MotoGPOD before. Mark Sorensen did the American Road Racer calendars that were out in 2006 and 2007, and unfortunately, he did not put one out for 2008. But I went ahead and I emailed Mark and I said, hey, I'm thinking about buying your old motorcycle. And, you know, so Mark told me some details about it and, you know, was very upfront with all the things he had done and the fact that, like, you know, he'd raced the motorcycle and the motorcycle had been on fire and a variety of other things. But it made me feel a lot more comfortable than the fact that the friend of a friend, sort of a routine. So whatever, took the plunge, bought the motorcycle. It's in my garage right now. Haven't had a chance to, sort of do much with it other than go out and sort of stroke it lovingly, because, you know, I just got it a couple of days ago and I don't even have a rear stand for it. So it's leaning up against my workbench in a very lame way, but I'll go ahead and get a rear stand here shortly and I'm going to do some things on it. It's got a race shift pattern right now. I've got to fix that. I don't think I can deal with that doing a race shift pattern. So I'm going to change it back to a normal street pattern and, probably take the numbers off because I don't think I deserve to have a motorcycle with numbers on it yet. And we'll just go out there and I'll do some track days and sort of see how it goes. And I will keep you posted. It's going to be a lot of fun. So moving on from the track day chit chat, let's see what else we got going on here. A couple of news items that did pop up that I'm going to go ahead and mention simply because, you know, they sort of popped up and sent in by by listeners and that sort of thing. One item here is that Casey Stoner was voted Young Australian in 2008. That's kind of cool. It's a short news item here. It's just 3 months ago that Casey Stoner zoomed down the Strait of Phillip Island on the back of a shiny red Ducati motorbike and became the MotoGP champion of the world. Dateline on this, January 25th, yeah. Now he's taken out a much more sobering award, the Young Australian of the Year. Turns out that this is actually a fairly big deal down in Australia. So congratulations to you there, Casey Stoner. That's cool stuff. I'm glad you're getting recognized, that your fellow countrymen and all that are sort of thing are recognizing your achievement. And that's really, really good stuff. And I think you're going to come back and surprise, well, not really surprise, but do us all proud with a season that you're defending your title, and it's going to be good stuff. And while we're talking about Australians, Steve Jones of USMotoGPFans.com fame. If you'll remember, Steve Jones runs a suite at Laguna Seca, and he's USMotoGPFans.com. He sells a suite. It's really, really cool stuff. But he sent me this story in here telling me this is from motorcycles.com.au, some Australian website. Troy Bayliss is definitely going to take his place on the grid in the opening World Superbike round in Qatar on February 23rd. So that's kind of cool. So we're going to be Troy Bayliss is going to be riding Ducati's all new 1098cc twin in his final year of international competition. Yada yada doodle. Recuperating after a broken collarbone, the bone pushed across, punched the sternum, causing a splinter. Whatever, he's having to heal up and everything, but he's going to be riding a Ducati there in Qatar. So that's kind of cool news. Good stuff to hear. Another item that I got here in my mailbox is the Yamaha Insider magazine. It's called Insider, the official Yamaha racing magazine. If you don't get this, this magazine is free. You just have to go up to yamaha-racing.com, yamaha-racing.com. And of course, I will put a link on the website. Go ahead and register and all that. Sign up for the magazine. They actually ship this magazine to me from Europe. This is a beautifully printed magazine. It's just fantastic stuff. It comes out 3 or 4 times a year. So it's not, you know, you're not going to get this all the time, but it's a gorgeous magazine. It smells good too. And It's sort of half Yamaha advertisement and half interesting inside stories and things about all the varieties of racing discipline. You know, they cover MotoGP, they cover World Superbike, they cover dirt bikes, they cover all sorts of different stuff. But there's some good stuff in here. You got Rossi riding an R6 at the Ascari track in Spain, which if you haven't heard of Ascari, it's this sort of race resort country club sort of thing going on in Spain, and it's just a knockout. I saw it on some TV show or another, and it's just fantastic. They have like this beautiful hotel and pools and all this business, so you can take your wife and family and they go off and do all that while you go ride out on the track, you know, in cars or motorcycles or whatever you're into, and it just looks like a really cool thing. And some other stuff, including a neat article about Rossi's helmets and stuff. And just as an example of why this magazine is cool, listen to this headline talking about AMA racer Josh Herron. Josh Herron pops his Super Sport cherry. So right there, that's going to give you an idea of how cool this magazine is when they have a headline like that right there in the magazine. So go ahead and take a look at that, yamaha-racing.com. So, all right, I think that kind of covers a very, very brief intro that we had, a little bit all over the map, but some good stuff. Again, thanks very much to Dom Perez and speedfiends.com for donating to the cause, and thanks again to everybody that's always helped out with the show. We are going to be getting back on track here, doing some good shows. We've got some really good stuff coming up. I know I've been saying that, and it's true, but I think the shows have been decent quality, but there are a couple of things on the horizon that I think you're really going to be happy with, so we're going to wait till we get those in the can before we really start talking about it, but look for those in future shows. And of course, like I said, within 30 days, we've got the racing action starting. Before we get to all of that, though, why don't we go ahead and listen to the call with Jules? All right, we got Jules on the phone. How are you doing, Jules? Been a long time since we talked to you.
Hi, Bob. How's it going? I'm fine.
Good, good. And lots of stuff to talk about with the testing getting underway here, and that the teams are working at a pretty healthy pace as far as it's getting the miles in and all of that sort of stuff. So let's just start looking at it. Let's see what some of the latest news is from Sepang, and just kind of run with it. Oh, boy. Because it looks like we got, I don't know, things are shaping up, definitely. It's really super interesting stuff what's going on.
Do you want to go over Phillip Island first?
Yeah, why don't we do that? That would make more sense to, since we didn't have a show last week, so there's no show last week. Let's talk a little bit about what happened at Phillip Island last week, and then move into Sepang for this week. So, going back in time, hey, Ghost Owner. I mean,
he's
just tearing it. Yes, and Toseland, exactly. Toseland did very, very well, which is good. I've been thinking that, and I exchanged some emails with somebody, you know, and if Tech 3 can give Toseland the support he needs and everything, he's going to be a force to be reckoned with out there. And I think he's proven that a little bit here.
Yeah, so I've been thinking about this, the results at Phillip Island, which I'm just going to go very quickly down the list here. Stoner with a 128.777, Hayden with a 129.734, and then Tolson with a 129.754. I mean, these guys are almost second back from Stoner. So, you know, we're back to things as they were last year. And then Dovizioso, who did very well there at 129.780. Edwards at 129.795. So he's continuing. Basically, if it wasn't for Stoner, these guys would have been like all very, very close. And then Vermeulen with 130, 216, De Angelis 130, 430. These times are, on qualifiers, but these guys also pulled a lot of laps, especially Nicky Hayden. He pulled 102 laps on the last day. It's amazing. I think he rode for something like 3 hours.
Yeah, his work ethic always shines through. I was looking at that from, and we'll talk about it a little later about Sepang. And yeah, I mean, look at the lap numbers. Actually, well, Depuyne pulled 115.
Yeah, that's right. That's right. So, that's right.
Yeah, I was just going to say, you know, that Hayden's always out there with the largest number of laps and everything. But he's, you know, he's definitely a busy guy.
He also crashed. So.
Yes. And who else had a crash? And this is not good. Touch on this a little bit. Was Hopkins. And what is an abductor muscle, a torn abductor muscle in his groin, which really doesn't sound like a lot of fun. And I'm not even sure what that muscle is.
Well, if it's in his groin, I'm sure it's very important.
Yeah, exactly. Doesn't sound like much fun. And I'm wondering if the new Mrs. Hopkins is going to be disappointed here for a while.
But the thing about Phillip Island is, and actually I mentioned this on Ride On 2, and then Moto Liam was browsing around on the forums, and he disagreed with me. But I just felt like I'm not really sure if Phillip Island is the best place to actually test, because it's such an incredibly varied weather. It's more like it's not testing for the bikes, it's more testing for the team, because it's a very variable weather. They had three very different days, you know, windy, rainy, kind of in between. The track is very unusual. There's probably only like two or three tracks that are somewhat similar to Phillip Island. One of them actually is Laguna Seca. So, you know, so getting a really good setup and a really good times there, that doesn't necessarily mean anything. Plus, I think that's, you know, it's one of those, you know, favorite tracks of all these riders. And there's a lot of riders who are very good there. Like, I think Tosin's always been good at Phillip Island. And
right.
So I think that basically they, although he hasn't been that back there in a few years, but I think a bunch of these guys just like had that confidence boost, and that's why they did really, really well. So I'm not giving too much credence to what happened at Phillip Island, as much as I like the previous testing. Actually, you know, testing in general is not a, I mean, if we look at all the previous years, it's not a good indicator of how things really go in the season.
Oh, no, never. But, you know, but it's what we got to talk about
now. It does make these guys confidence. It's confidence building, so it's very, very important.
Yes, yes, true. And even if it is a more, like you say, more of a test and practice for the team as far as, you know, dealing with the weather conditions and a variety of other issues and stuff, that's still part of the whole game because it is such a team effort. And Phillip Island comes at a time in the season, you know, it tends to be, it's always a somewhat meaningful race. And I think, too, that the flowing nature of Phillip Island, that some of the test results there are valid for, like you say, Laguna Seca, but also I would think somewhat even like Donington and possibly yes. even to a point, Assen. And but in any really? Event, that say again?
You think Assen, huh?
Well, to a point. That's what I'm thinking. I think Donington more so, but
yeah, Donington. You're right. Donington, Laguna Seca, Phillip Island, very similar. Rolling,
and I'm just kind of thinking of, you know, and the flowing nature. I was thinking, well, you know, you got Assen, which has its flowing points, but now the new Assen is quite different anyway, and so I'm not, you know. But
it's also a very, very, very fast track. I mean, Assen is much faster than the other tracks.
Yes, this is true. That is true, too. Yeah, I hadn't thought of that top overall speed. But Sepang seems to be the favorite just because it offers such a wide variety of different, you know, setup opportunities and all of that. And I think it's just it's, you know, they can rely on the weather to be, you know,
hot.
Yeah. And often damp, but not always, you know, that sort of thing. So. Yeah, Sepang does tend to be a favorite test place. We spent a lot of time in Sepang. But in any case, more about, let's see, what do we got us to touch on about Phillip Island? Any good quotes and comments that came out of that? Let's take a look again back here in the time machine. Like I said, we had Hopkins was injured. That's not necessarily a good thing for him, that's for sure. What's this one about? Hayden fast but frustrated here on crash.net. Did you read that one or see the
blurbage on that? Well, he's been frustrated mostly with the fact that they're going to end up riding the 2007 bike probably. I mean, almost definitely in Qatar. And
because they're just
not getting the power out of the pneumatic engine.
Yeah, yeah, and that's it's so weird to see Honda, you know, I dropping the ball, caught out, you know, whatever you want to call it, again.
Especially again.
To a point.
Yeah.
Well, compared to last year, you know what I'm saying? I mean, it's just last year they I don't think they were quite ready. And, you know, maybe they thought they were. And obviously they, you know, they made huge improvements over the season. But at the start of the season, they were way behind the power curve.
Yep.
And so, you know, they'll, they're, I don't know. Have you been reading much about
beyond the just the sort of quote machine stuff, have you been reading much about what's going on with the pneumatic thing? Have they been saying anything?
No, sorry, I don't have any extra info there. Yeah. I mean, I doubt anybody really does because, you know, Honda's pretty secretive about that stuff. And
exactly.
I was tight-lipped. Yeah. Like, I was pretty surprised that, that you know, Nicky was even saying anything about it. I think he feels a little more confident about talking about his team. I don't know. It's been many years, and he has a world championship, and, you know.
Yeah, it's a possibility. He might be feeling also a little, you know, I mean, the whole, put out is a good word for it. Yeah. And, you know, and just, you know, it's like, well, what are they going to do? You know, cut my hair, send me to a wreck. So they, you know, I
it worked for Rossi, sort of.
Yeah, that's true. But, so that might be true too. But also these stories do tend to come up also on crash.net and, they, you know, there might be some sort of interplay going on there with a, the, you know, writers and all of that sort of thing. DeAngelis, blah, blah, blah. Yeah. Whatever. It is another interesting point you brought up yesterday when we were mentioning a few things on the phone is the number of world champions we've got.
Oh, wait, I'm not going to take credit for that. It's just, it's a member of Ride On 2 forums that brought that up and he's a fairly new member, No More Midget Riders. I wonder who he might be against. Anyway, so he mentioned the fact that this year we're going to have 10 world champions in the MotoGP class. 125, 250 MotoGP and World Superbike champions. So those guys are Stoner, Dovizioso, who won 250s, Edwards, World Superbike, Pedrosa, 250s. Sorry, Dovizioso was a 125 champion, right?
Right. And yes, he was. I don't believe he was 250.
Yeah, sorry. That was Lorenzo. So Lorenzo, Melandri, who was a 250 champion, Rossi, who was obviously a champion of, I think at least a couple of times, and Toesland World Superbike twice, Capirossi, 250cc champion, Hayden, 2006 MotoGP champion. So that's an amazing, it's a very interesting insight because I had to go back and like do my little stats look up and the most we've ever had before was 6 and that was in 2006.
Right. So basically what we're looking at is a grid filled with some very seriously good riders in their very various classes. And
most importantly, I think confident riders, very confident riders. Yes.
Yeah. So and it's going to shape up like we were saying, it's going to be the best season ever. It always is. But no, it will be. I think there's a lot of talent out there. And I think that as long as the factories and the teams can bring the goods to the table, that it is really going to shape up. And, you know, we're already starting to see predictions coming in. I got an email a while ago, you know, somebody's thinking it's going to prediction for the championship of the season, which is awful early to call. And Stoner, Rossi, and Lorenzo is 1-2-3. And that was from just to give him credit so that if he turns out to be right, he can say, I said so back in January. And that was Cesar Partida.
I still think we're going to see Danny up there. I just wanted to, there's a little errata there. I think I said 2006 was the last time we had a lot of champions. It was actually 2007 last year. We had 6 champions. And that's not including Stoner. Anyway, right. just in case.
How far did you go back? Just out of curiosity.
I went back as far as I could. Having the access to stats down to 1993, so
okay, yeah, so certainly
there didn't used to be as much cross pollination between these guys before,
right?
And we're talking about world championships, right? So like if you go back to like the rainy years, I mean those guys didn't come out of world championships, so
Right. World Superbike didn't even exist, yeah. And there was the whole thing was much different. The whole sport, the whole field.
Yep.
But yeah, yeah. So yeah, I like the cross pollination term. That's a good way to put it. Well, all right. Let's see what else we got going on here.
Flipping Danny through comment, some Danny comment. Danny comment.
Danny comments. Yeah, I haven't found the dang Danny comments. MotoGP Matters, which is Kropotkin Thinks blog, has a mention in passing to Danny being upset and a bit put out. Let's see. Let me find it here real quick. I want to read it exactly to give David Emmett his credit where credit is due, because he said something quite entertaining. And now, of course, I can't find it.
Well, I mean, I read about it before it appeared on Kropotkin's blog.
Yeah.
There was a – because it basically happened the day after that Danny crashed in Sepang.
Oh, it was that far back. Okay, I wasn't looking far enough back.
Yeah,
okay,
it was that far back. And he said – this is what he said after he talked about his hand. And he said, I still don't know what happened – to cause the crash. I think it was something on the bike that failed. Blah, blah, blah. And then he goes, I'm worried about recovering quickly from the injury. I want to go back on the bike as soon as possible. Historically, Nicky has not been very beneficial when he has taken on the responsibility to evolve the motorcycle.
Nice. And, nice.
That's a... after the moment that this was posted on various forums, it was just like an explosion of people like, what?
raising the bullshit flag. And I've just been sort of dropped off the map here with my schedule and everything and haven't been able to see these things on the forum. But I read on the Kropotkin Thinks, and he says, the development of the 2008 RC212V is going to be up to Nicky Hayden, a fact that Pedrosa has been complaining bitterly about. After all, the last time Nicky Hayden developed a bike, it won a championship. And I thought that one was quite clever.
That was great.
Yes. But, that's... So, again, with team like that, teammate like that, you know, kind of for Hayden, you know, who needs opponents? So,
well, you know, they always say that your biggest opponent is your teammate, but that's not always true. Obviously, look at Colin Edwards and Valentino Rossi. I think Colin did about as much as a teammate could to help Rossi the last 2 years.
Yeah,
so got Vermeulen and Hopkins, who seem to have been a good team, but you know, it's hard to tell. It's like these guys are in the spotlight, so it's much more visible.
Exactly. And I mean, you might want to beat your teammate on the track because you have to basically prove that you're a better rider and all of this and that and the other. But I think that there should be some sort of team respect. Team, yeah. Yeah, you know, just
really,
you guys are on the same team, you know,
teamwork. Like, I mean, the whole paddock should have respect for each other. I mean,
they do actually, and by and large, they do, and you're right, they probably should, because they're all top notch. Like we said, we got 10 world champions of one form or another out there this year. So you know, these guys are all good, or they wouldn't be there.
Yep.
And,
but I do want to say something about this because I was very upset, just like everybody else. I just thought it was just such a stupid remark. But then I was thinking about it, you know, I think it was wrong to make the remark because they're supposed to be a team and it's poor sportsmanship and all that kind of stuff. But I think he's actually pretty spot on, because Nicky's not a good development rider. You know, I started thinking about this, like, I'm going to probably upset some listeners, but... you know, he's Randy Mamola has said that he's not a very good development rider. Nicky himself has said he's not a very good development rider. I actually was poking around and found some quotes where he said, you know, he's much more of a like an endurance guy. And back in 2006 when he was on that development evolution machine, every time he got new parts, it was kind of an excuse. Like I just remember most years when Honda would have new parts, the teams would be kind of scrambling to get at them. And it was like, ooh, you know, like, well, can Grassini get the parts for Sete Gibber now, who was leading the championship before HRC. You know, this obviously it was probably contractual, so they wouldn't allow that. But people considered that those parts were a good thing. And in Nicky's 2006 season, it seemed like every time he got new parts, he was hampered. And more recently, last year, he was really struggling to get kind of like adapted to the traction control to the point where he, you know, asked to have it turned down. And then he started riding a lot better. And, right. You know, this is because his style and stuff, whatever. But as a result, Honda didn't get as much information on that traction control as they probably would have wanted to. So I think I think that Danny's actually probably saying the truth is that, you know, with Hayden only on the HRC bike, they're not going to get as much development. However, that all being said, he's not a MotoGP champion. Nicky Hayden is a MotoGP champion. Nicky Hayden is, and you don't talk shit basically about your team like that, especially yeah. before the season has even started. I mean, come on. I mean, like, this is really such a good tone for the championship.
Right. I think that's a very fair analysis and assumption, and you're right. And yeah, there are some riders are just better at it than others, and that's why their strengths. And that's why sometimes we'll see a guy that we wonder, why the hell is this guy there? It simply is because he's such a great great tester. And so, but yes, Pedrosa should basically keep his mouth shut. And
he's, you know, everybody's of course blaming Alberto Puig. That he's, you know, he's still playing his power battles over there at HRC. Through his midget mouthpiece.
And yeah, and then Bedros is just basically being a mouthpiece for Puig. And I'm not sure. Is that? Do you think that's true? Because I've done a. I don't know if I've
honestly,
necessarily buy that
I
one.
I think that, you know, people are getting like really into this like conspiracy theories and right. You know, I mean, come on, these guys, they were talking to him on the after he came out of like, he didn't go say, hey, listen, you got to go diss Nicky next time you're talking to the press. Okay. You
know? Yeah. I think that's a bit much. I think you're looking for the second midget on the grassy knoll at that point. So
we really shouldn't be saying that midget things. Anyway.
Yeah, I know. That's kind of mean, but it's, you know, whatever.
It's standard fare, unfortunately, for Danny, I'm sure. So
it is. I'm sure it's not the first time he's heard it. And, you know, hey, the guy, you know, in this is what the cards he was dealt. And he's actually, you know, he's making the best of it. You know, what are you going to do? If you're going to be that small, you got to be a jockey or a motorcycle rider. So, and you should hear some of the stuff they talk about. Alonso, Formula One Alonso, and finding his, you know, how does he find a girlfriend that's actually shorter than him and stuff like this? You know? So it gets even meaner in the world of Formula One. Well, all right. So then, a week after Phillip Island, actually not even a full week, really, it was a few days. We went back to Sepang Let's see.
Everybody went back. I mean, Tex, we did not go back.
Right.
Suzuki didn't go back. Ducati didn't go back. So both Ducati teams. So, you know, it was a much different kind of field.
Exactly.
So we had Fiat Yamaha, who never really left, although they did take a break. It wasn't like they were testing the whole time while people were in Phillip Island. We had Honda Gresini, Kawasaki, who also brought who brought their test riders.
Right, Olivier Jacques, and several others. So,
and then a couple others. And then they had this I found very interesting. And then these two, at first unnamed Yamaha test riders, who were on, surprise, surprise, Bridgestones.
Hmm. Indeed, yeah. I'm looking at the times here. Yeah.
Yeah, the times are not that good, but
it's a Yamaha test team. We don't get the rider name on these initial results. Yeah.
So the interesting thing about that is that I think it really shows that Yamaha is extremely committed to making this Bridgestone Yamaha thing work for Rossi. This is the first time I've ever I can remember that Yamaha brought extra riders to a test, to one of the official tests. Well, it's not an official test. I guess it's just a testing period. But I don't remember that they've ever brought test riders before. Other teams have. I think Suzuki and Kawasaki are pretty, that's pretty typical for them to bring extra bikes because it's extremely expensive, obviously, to bring two extra M1s out there. And then to have them running around the Bridgestones, which basically means that they're gathering data for one rider.
Right, exactly. But that one rider is an extremely, extremely important part of the puzzle.
Oh, yeah.
And I think that, that Yamaha is probably sensibly enough putting a lot of eggs in that basket or whatever analogy you want to use it. I think that's probably a wise choice on their part. And also, you know, even though, and maybe I'm going to be way off the mark on this one, but you know, the Bridgestones are completely new for the Yamaha as far as the tires. And whereas the Michelins, you know, they're still going to have valid data from last year.
And they've got
and this
three
and that
to help out there.
Right. Right. Riding on Michelins as well. But so,
and obviously, you know, doing well because Colin was super hot in Sepang.
Yes, yes, and
I think there was actually a discussion about this at one point on Barf and on Ride On 2 forums where we talked about. Somebody said, you know, well, now that Colin is off Tech 3 Yamaha, Rossi's not going to have his favorite, you know, guy to help him test and whatever. And Liam Schubert jumped in and said, well, you think that Tech 3 is not sharing information with Yamaha Racing? Of course they are. So I'm sure that those guys are getting good data for the Michelin-Yamaha combo. But still, I was thinking, you know, if I was Lorenzo hanging out over there in Sepang testing, I'd be kind of like, I wouldn't be like pissed or anything, but I would be like pretty lonely, you know? He's the only the only Michelin guys out there. So, I mean, except from Hayden.
Right, right. Yeah. And he's, yeah, have we seen anything in the news comments from him about,
not
about
that
sort of a...
Not a thing.
Yeah, no. And he normally can be relied on for, for shooting his mouth off. So, so I'm sure we will start seeing some comments from Lorenzo, but, as of yet, yeah, it seems to be a little bit quiet. I'm just checking a few sort of headlines and whatnot to see if there's anything. And yeah, I'm not seeing, comments on the most recent news of, like I said, of Lorenzo shooting his mouth off. Cause, that was one thing when we first heard the announcement of Lorenzo and Rossi being on the same team and before the whole tire situation happened, I was almost looking forward to the friction, frankly, is what I think you're going to call it between them. And I mean, I still, to a point, you're going to get it. But now that it's almost like the Yamaha factory team is two separate efforts, you know, they send out two completely separate press releases and this sort of thing whenever they're doing stuff because of the Bridgestone Michelin thing they got going on. So, you know, you might not get as much of that sort of, I don't know, drama or office politics or whatever you want to call it, might not be coming out quite as much.
Yeah, agreed. And you know, I'm sure there's guys up top that are like, you know, just keep that down. I mean, they don't want, you know, Rossi has been very cordial with Lorenzo. There was a lot of rumors that he, you know, despises the guy or whatever. But I think they're both acting very professional.
Right, right. And that's actually a good thing. I mean, I sort of say that, you know, that this is something that you don't get in MotoGP where we don't have a lot of news other than the actual sort of racing news. And that's true to a point. And it's a good thing, but it does also mean that like the off season tends to be pretty quiet. Just because, you know, like the December test ban and everything, there's nothing, you know, you don't have some sort of latest scandal or something to talk about. And basically it's gossip. And,
yeah.
So it is a good thing, but it does mean that, you know, you're, there's not much to read about your chosen sport and that sort of thing. And Rossi, I think Rossi tends to be more cutting in a kind of an aside sort of a way. He doesn't tend to really, you know, he's not going to come up and say, you know, exactly. Yeah, with Biaggi, he couldn't resist it to a point. But even then, he tended to sort of couch things in somewhat vague terms. You know, it was rare that he would say, you know, things like, you know, just flat out Max sucks. You know what I'm saying? It would happen every now and then that it would be an outright, you know, we know who he's talking about. But otherwise, it always seems to be. He puts thought into his words, which we've often said, too, about Rossi, that pretty much everything he says is calculated.
Yeah, yeah.
Tuesday at Sepang was Rossi thinking it was the first time that he'd started adjusting the Yamaha M1 around his Bridgestone tires, and he's riding better than at the first test.
He had an amazing lap in the qualifiers, which is something that he's very pleased about, because he had a, you know, Bridgestone's not necessarily well known for qualifying,
right?
Tires. Michelin last year was incredibly successful in qualifying, and then of course it was during the race that things would fall apart. And but Rossi set a, you know, he broke his own lap record, and that is basically the fastest time at Sepang this year. So. I mean, ever, right. Actually. 2 minutes and 0 seconds, 0.3 seconds. So that's pretty amazing.
Mm-hmm.
And then.
Right. He's a. Yeah, I'm looking. Oh, yeah, looking at that. And that was, yeah, right at the gate. Yeah, Sepang. Yeah, two.
I think he wanted to probably to get, like, get that done. He said he wanted to get some more tire testing done and then do a race simulation, which is what he did. Today, which is yesterday in the Sepang, so which he did much better than the previous test. I think he shaved like a second off of his times on the race tires.
Right, which is making significant progress. I'm comparing these times here. Sorry, I'm listening. I promise I am, but I'm looking through my notes. I don't know. I'm kind of looking forward to the race at Sepang, to tell you the truth. Looking at some of these tests, sort of the times that they're swapping back and forth and everything, it's going to be interesting how that does play out. But we are less than a month away from a race at my just possibly least favorite venue, Qatar.
Well, it should be very interesting this year because that's a nighttime race thing. So
exactly. I'm actually really looking forward to it. It's going to be real interesting, but you're still going to have dirt all over the track and you know, five spectators out there in the stands and, you know, and the usual stuff. Some of the other things that I hate about Qatar, and it's still going to be hotter than hell. April. But depending on the time schedule, which it looked like they were running it more evening than real night, sort of a thing with a race, something like it, by the time they actually start the race, it was, I think was what, 9 or 10 o'clock in the evening. Mm-hmm. So that means if they do the sort of typical schedule thing, free practice and in the morning and whatnot is going to be in the hotter part of the day. It's going to be, you know, 4 p.m.
Yeah. It's still going to be
cool. And then you're going to get an enormous, amount of difference between those two things, and I can tell you that asphalt's still going to be roasting hot even at 10 o'clock, and filthy dirty with sand. So I don't know. We'll see how it works out. It is, and the track layout itself, the track, other than being somewhat a little bit of a, you know, modern cookie cutter ish type thing where the cameras can't even get close and everything. Other than that, I mean, the track is actually pretty good.
Mm-hmm.
It's just in such
very flat,
crappy
though.
Location.
And, yeah.
Yeah. Well. Yeah. Look where it is. But it is what it is, and I'm definitely looking forward to it. And then we've got next week, which I think was February 16th or something like that. They're going to do the official ERTA test at Jerez, which now Jerez, there's a classic sort of track. Other than it's, you know, it's got a lot of classic-y qualities. Not a cookie cutter by far.
So. It's also important because it's the second race of the season. So, yes. You know, the setup there actually is going to be very critical to the early racing in the season. So,
right, exactly. The race, and yeah, that test at Jerez is going to establish what they're going to be doing, because in that time there will only be so much development, so many changes, and so forth. So, yeah, and the you know, somebody will get a BMW, so that's kind of cool too.
That's right, because those guys could never afford one.
I know. It's kind of funny, isn't it? How these guys that actually can afford, you know, the fancy cars and watches and things that they get, you know, get them for free.
I was actually amazed. There was a story about Vermeulen last year after the season that he's really into. He's like, collects V8 cars, and I was like, oh, that's pretty cool. Wonder how, you know, if he has like two or three cool cars. And then I saw a segment on the official MotoGP video cast, and like they were interviewing him, and man, he has some insane cars. You know, that kid is loaded.
Yeah, has a garage full of.
It was amazing. I was like, I seriously did not expect. He's a madman. He's got a lot of cars.
I'm gonna have to find that. I've been kind of it's fun to ignoring a lot of that.
Those video casts kind of made the testing band kind of part
manageable.
It was fun because, you know, they stopped them, but it was fun to just go back in time and like just catch some of their stories. They're a little bit off the wall.
Yeah, they are kind of good. Actually, they run some really good sort of tech bits every now and then too, as well as the sort of fluff, which, I mean, you know, let's face facts, you know, taking a tour of Toslin's or Vermeulen's garage is a bit like fluff, but it is fun. You know, these are our fans of these guys, and we want to learn more about what they do and what makes them tick and all of that sort of thing.
So I just want to mention that Lorenzo today did end on the top of the timesheets, whereas he was really struggling. He was about 2 seconds off pace. Of course, I mean, this was on a qualifier, but still, he definitely found something, and it's good for him because he's going to walk away from the test with some confidence that I think he was probably going to be missing otherwise, because he was really down there. He was like, you know, two seconds off Stoner's pace, race pace, then down to like a second the next day, but still not reaching. And then today he had a good qualifying time. It wasn't enough to beat Rossi's, but it was a 2 minute and 0.7 seconds, and then
right, and half a second faster than Rossi's fastest time on the day. So
right,
you know,
but,
I mean,
but Rossi gave up on the qualifier. Like he did a qualifying lap in there very early in the day, and then went straight to race tires and did a lot of laps on race tires.
Right, but it's still I think, you know, a confidence booster, like
Definitely.
You say, and just all around kind of a good thing. Looking through the rest of that. Did you say you know who these Yamaha test riders are? Or
yeah, their names came up. I don't know who they are. I've never heard of them.
They're not before. Like famous names or something? They're just...
They probably are like in Japan.
Sure.
But so sorry to any Japanese listeners. One more thing I did want to mention before we wrap up is that, which was that Haga... when he was recently talking, what he said. He says about World Superbike. He said, "We will have 30 individual races this year, and many good riders have now entered the World Superbike Series, including 6 Japanese. I'm looking forward to a good battle with all of them. I think World Superbike will be more exciting than MotoGP this year, so people should come along to their local race and see the close battles." And hell, it was more exciting last year too. So
I was going to say, yeah, I mean, definitely, there, you know? Arguably, yeah. I mean, last year was a great season for World Superbike, and they're rerunning those on speed, by the way, and which I thought was kind of interesting.
Yeah,
but it's kind of interesting that we're getting so many Japanese into the World Superbike. Do you think that the Why is this happening, do you think? What's your sort of take on that one?
I don't know. Biorhythms. No.
Yeah. I mean, it could just simply be standard evolution. It could be that, again, looking for that, you know, second shooter on the grassy knoll kind of conspiracy theory and all that business. You know, we know the Japanese factories want Japanese champions, and they've been trying in MotoGP for years, and just one way or another, you know, it just hasn't worked out. So do you think they're just, is there a possibility that where they're shifting their focus to they're going to dominate World Superbike? I don't know, you know,
but well, a lot of these guys, they don't have enough experience on the world stage to go to MotoGP. Maybe this is a jumping stone for some of them, you know. I think if Nori had a better ride in MotoGP, I think he would have done better. I mean, the guy is unbelievably gifted rider.
Yes.
I mean, now it'd be too late. I mean, I think he's the kind of guy who, like, you know, he's past his prime in terms of, like, being able to adapt to something completely different, which I'm sure 800cc MotoGP bike is, like, you know, night and day with the World Superbike. So, a couple of years ago when he was in Aprilia, I think that was kind of like a waste of talent developing the Cube. Both him and Colin, I think, got kind of screwed there.
Yeah, that was a shame that project, stillborn almost, if anything else, but just couldn't get a handle on it. No. Too many problems. But yeah, no, Nitro Nori is, and he's good to watch too. That guy, man, like I said, the World Superbike stuff was great last year, and it should be a good season this year.
Man, just have such a strange schedule. The second half of the season last year was unbelievable.
Exactly, really, and really MotoGP fun. Tapered off in the second half of the season, and World Supers picked up.
Right,
as far as exciting races to watch, where you're just jumping up and down. And my gripe about World Superbike is the schedule is just bizarre, of strange long giant gaps, and then, you know, three races in 3 weeks, and just, yeah, I don't know, it's kind of weird. Well, all right. I think why don't we go ahead and wrap it up for today? It's been a good call. I always like having you on the phone, Jules, and we're going to have to get back into the swing of things, having you on the show more regularly now that we've got some things happening. There's all kinds of great stuff to always talk about. So thanks, and we'll talk to you soon.
Thank you. All right. Thanks for listening.
All right. Thanks a lot, Jules, for being on the show. We always like having you. I think it's always interesting stuff. A couple of small emails and whatnot that I did not mention in the intro. Why don't we go ahead and cover them right now? First one is from George Ninisto, and he had something to share. Recently, you talked about watching Long Way Round on Fox Reality. I've been lucky enough to see that my TiVo recognized that I might like to watch Long Way Round. Unfortunately, it did not think that I would want to see all of the episodes, so I was hooked. I searched on the internet, and I found the Long Way Round website and store. So he says, George says, the shows are available to download for $1.99 each at the Long Way Round website, which I believe is longwayround.com. And that's kind of cool. So for $1.99, you get access to a high resolution version that you can put on your iPod or whatever, your Apple TV, just watch on your computer, however it is that you watch that sort of thing, and you can do anything with the files. The files are not restricted like the movies from iTunes. You can add them to a DVD, blah, 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 blah. He says the way they are protecting themselves is by stamping your name on the video file. When I watch the video, along the top of the screen, it says, "Welcome, George Nisto," which is, George says, how cool that my TV knows my name. And he says, for $20, I have all 10 episodes to enjoy as many times as I want, anywhere I want. And of course, that stamping where it says, "Welcome, George," or "Welcome, you know, Bill," or whatever your name is, it's only in the very, very first part of the episode. So they sort of, you know, stamp that across the top, and then you can watch a high-res version. That's a pretty cool thing. This is the promise of the internet, and this is why the internet is cool. So besides podcasts, which of course are very cool, you can also get things like this, and you know, that's a good thing. So it's well worth doing if you haven't seen The Long Way Around yet. That is one miniseries that is way, way worth watching. And I know we kind of talked about the whole Long Way Down and all that sort of thing. There's mixed results, mixed input, whether or not that one's really, really worth watching or not. I personally still have not yet seen it. I'm probably going to go ahead and figure that one out and find it somewhere, and I'll watch it, and I'll pass on to you my opinion on that one. And let's see, while we're talking about TV shows and all kinds of good stuff, you remember a couple episodes ago I was going on and on about the Barry Sheen biography that showed up on the Biography Channel in, well, just about every country in the world except the United States. And I was lucky enough to see that show. It was awesome stuff. And you do need to write biography.com, log on there, send them an email, tell them we want the Baza Sheen biography and get off their butts and stop showing us crap about Britney Spears or whatever. And we want to see Barry Sheen. But Richard Mallett in the UK sent me an email. He says, following on from your discussion about the Barry Sheen DVD documentary, he says, if you want more detail, there's an excellent book that was published last year by Sphere called Barry. It's written by Nick Harris and Steve Parrish, who are announcers for the official Dorna announcing team. And Steve Parrish is... totally drawn a blank. Steve Parrish, I believe, is the BBC announcer for MotoGP, and also he's the BBC color guy, and he was Sheen's Suzuki teammate in the 70s. Parrish then went on to race trucks and now provides the BBC MotoGP commentary. See, I should have just read the email and I wouldn't have had to worry about that. With the delectable Susie Perry and Charlie Cox. Blah, blah, blah. Book gives great insight into GP racing in the 70s and 80s and shows you how much has changed, especially around safety. So if you're into MotoGP type books and things like that, look for that one. It's just called Barry, and it's by Sphere Publishing, S-P-H-E-R-E, Sphere. And I think that one sounds good. So thanks for the tip on that one, Richard. We will be on the lookout for that book. All right. I think that is going to cover all the stuff we wanted to cover today here on the show. Again, I got some good stuff waiting here in the wings. I think you're going to be very, very pleased. I'm not going to, you know, go out on a limb and promise anything, because I've had that happen and then it doesn't come through and I look silly. And then I'm just, you know, scrabbling around for content and kind of basically sitting here talking to myself. But in any case, it's going to be good stuff. So between now and then, why don't you keep the shiny side up, and we'll talk to you later, and we're out. MotoGPOD is produced by Bob Hayes, and I'm solely responsible for its content. MotoGP is a trademark of Dorna Sports SL. The MotoGPOD podcast and MotoGPOD.com are not affiliated with Dorna Sports SL. All other trademarks are the property of their respective owners, and MotoGPOD is not affiliated with any of them.